Hello and welcome to Film School for Dad, the podcast where I attempt to catch my dad up on a lifetime of activity squandered on serious, intellectual, and meaningful pursuits in lieu of a solid education in popular culture and cinema. I'm Harvey.
And I'm Dad.
I love that you call yourself Dad. That's great.
Yeah, well, I don't. I'm David, actually.
That's right. David, that's probably better. And each week we watch a movie that Dad hasn't seen but probably should have to get his opinion on whether it deserves its place in cinematic history, at least as I decree it. So what are we discussing today, Dad? Do you remember the movie?
I think you said Memento.
That's right. Let's play the music. Is the Hitchcockian theme song again.
Memento indeed sounds like it could be a Hitchcock movie, but clearly it's not.
It is pretty Hitchcockian though. I'll give you the intro and then, yeah, actually it's probably a good point. We seem to keep talking about Hitchcock for some reason. Maybe just the intro music. So Memento is a 2000 film, or should I say year 2000? Sounds weird that way. Directed by Christopher Nolan and starring Guy Pearce, an Aussie, Joe Pantolino, who you probably haven't heard of, and Carrie-Anne Moss. And it's notable for involving a very clever storytelling gimmick that I won't mention because I don't want to ruin the movie for you. It's kind of like a mind-blowing kind of experience. So hopefully that's not saying too much and give you expectations beyond what it'll do. But this was Christopher Nolan's first feature film. And like most of the films that he did after that, that he's done since, it just works out the brain in a way that most films don't. So this is not a passive movie watching experience. You will hopefully be drawn in and you'll be very engaged. I remember just trying to keep up with the plot was enough to just keep me thinking all the time. And you'll get that as we watch it.
I was about to say, I hope I can keep up. It sounds challenging.
Yeah, you need to have the brain on, that's for sure. But but you don't need to turn it on now. The movie kind of draws you into that. It's a really interesting sort of experiment in storytelling. But as I say, I don't want to reveal too much, so we'll just have to see how you go. Now, we originally planned to watch Interstellar, and it turns out you've already seen that, and we saw it together.
We did.
How did I forget that?
When I was visiting you overseas.
That's right. And I had all sorts of talking points about Interstellar. I had it all planned out. And we're not going to be able to talk about any of that stuff.
No.
Except for the fact that you've actually seen a movie from the director that we're going to be watching.
I have. And it was an interesting movie too. Yeah. It left me feeling a bit bleak on the day.
What do you remember of it? It was a while ago, 5 years ago.
Holidays at the time. Well, I remember it was about the destruction of the world and climate change impact on the planet.
Yeah.
And leapt back and forward in time to explain. I think they took a space trip or whatever.
Oh, there was most of the movie was the space trip, yeah, I think. Yeah.
And you saw glimpses of past and future lives, as I remember.
Yeah, one of the, again, it kind of has parallels to what we're going to see, but one of the plot devices of Interstellar was that when they travel through space, time moves differently based on their proximity to the black hole or something like that. So they go into space for 1 year and then they come back and 100 years has passed or something like that on Earth. So they have to deal with that time shift.
There weren't a lot of laughs in it.
It wasn't funny at all. No. In fact, I can't remember a single joke in that movie. But that's a bit of a trademark of Christopher Nolan. He's quite bleak. This is another one that is quite bleak, although I think this has a little bit more of a touch of humor to it. Maybe just because Guy Pearce kind of puts his own little spin on it.
Right. Well, I do know Guy Pearce.
Yes,
he
should.
Actually comes from my part of the world, and I'd be struggling to tell you what else he's been in other than the one about the gay people. What's it called?
They're not necessarily gay. They were drag queens.
Yeah, the drag queens.
Yeah, but Priscilla Queen of the
Priscilla
Desert.
Priscilla Queen of the Desert. Yes, I'm certainly aware he was in that.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Yep.
I've seen him in a TV show too. Guy Pearce, I forget what it is.
Mm.
Nothing else springs to mind. I probably have seen him in something else, but it doesn't. Hasn't stuck.
He's had one of those careers where it seems like everything that he's in is a good movie, but he doesn't do a lot of them. He's done a lot of big American movies, but he's sometimes not the lead or. So he's been in quite a few things. He was in, for instance, the latest, you know, the Alien franchise. You've heard of that, right?
Well, I've heard of it.
Yeah. So there was an Alien movie recently, and he's like the owner of a company in that. Like it's a big role, but he's not in it very much. He's got like aged makeup in it too. It's quite pathetic.
Right.
He doesn't look old at all. Doesn't quite work. So when you watched Interstellar, did you think, I'd like to watch more from this director?
No, I wouldn't say that was my reaction.
Okay.
No, I found it interesting and an achievement in the way that it dealt with the subject matter.
Mm.
But it's I'd have been the category of movies that wouldn't invite me to come back for more because, as I say, it just left me feeling pretty bleak in the finish.
Mm. No, it definitely does that.
Just
it's very
the
sad.
Same as if the first Spielberg movie I'd seen was Schindler's List, I probably wouldn't have lined up to see anything more by him either. It's the same sort of reaction. It's not a movie made to make you want to come back for more, but it intrigued me as to why he made it and where he was coming from. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think Interstellar was a bit of an intellectual exercise. The premise of it was basically, well, originally Steven Spielberg was making Interstellar, by the way, so it was going to be a Spielberg movie. I'm sure it would have been all sort of hammy and positive music. It might have actually been more inspirational.
Mm.
But I think Christopher Nolan was the best thing that could have ever happened to that movie because he came in, he brought in the original theoretical physicist who had written all the theories that they were based on, and he said, come in, keep us honest, and don't let us violate any known laws of physics. And that's how the movie was produced. So the whole story was written around real theoretical physics.
Yeah.
So, Einstein's, equals MC squared and all that sort of bullshit.
Well,
that was all taken into account.
We did Jurassic Park last time, and there was a bit of that in there as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Similarity in theoretically possible.
Well, I guess in a way there's a scientific basis to Memento as well, or at least a more of a medical science sort of concept to it. So there's something at the core of it that that you'll need to swallow before you can buy into the whole film. So given
what I know is so little, it sounds like a cross between Interstellar and Psycho. Would that be right?
Nah, there's no butcher knives
there's
in it.
There's no Hitchcock at all in it.
I would call it very Hitchcockian. I think if Hitchcock had come up with this idea, he would have made this movie.
So there's a thriller element to it.
Yes, it's definitely a thriller. Yeah. Right. I reckon we should just crack on and watch it. What do you reckon?
I'd say so.
All right, cool. Let's do that. All right, we're back. We just watched Memento. What do you think, Dad?
Well, it was a riveting movie.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. That's a good start.
Had my attention and got totally absorbed with it.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Yeah. Except for the pizza debacle in the middle. It was a bit distracting.
Well, yes. We didn't get the pizza delivery at the time we wanted it, but that was just a brief break. But the overall impression was that I found it quite absorbing.
You said something interesting, though, at the end, or actually when we paused, you said you couldn't see how it could possibly finish in 13 minutes, but it did, right?
It did, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like 13 minutes, that last 13 minutes. I was actually in my head thinking, it's got to be half an hour.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah, I found myself thinking, what is the whole time span of this, as we edge back in time, what is the whole time span that we're dealing with? And I assume it's a matter of days.
It's a few days, three or four days maybe. Yeah. Well, actually, maybe it's not, because in a sense it's a real-time movie. There's no lost time. There's a couple of breaks in time, like when they have sex, they don't show that. They just cut to they're lying in each other's arms. So there's a couple of small things like that. But in general, the opening scene of every – sorry, the opening moment of every scene is the closing moment of the following scene, because it plays in reverse, right?
Right.
So they actually join up almost every single scene.
Just thinking about it, the bloke at the motels said something about him being there a fair while.
Yeah, that's right. But that may not be the span of the movie. He might have been staying there for months, and it was before the end of the movie. It's so hard to talk about.
I assumed he was living with his wife at the start of the movie.
Okay, so let's get to your theory on – first of all, you said that you thought you knew how it was going to end. Do you feel like that was accurate?
I got the clues somewhere beyond midway through that I felt he'd killed his own wife.
And what do you think was the reason that you got that impression?
I'm not absolutely sure. As they went back and as I learnt more about the other characters and weighed up his mental condition and his memory loss, I just felt that he had committed some atrocity and that had led to the whole thing. That was the overwhelming impression I had probably two-thirds of the way through.
So your impression is that he murdered his wife?
No, I'm still to this minute not clear on whether he murdered or whether he killed her accidentally. I mean, certainly I expected it to be that he murdered her.
Right.
But having seen the end of the movie since, I had those thoughts. He was involved in her death, whether it was accidental or deliberate. Were we told? I don't know.
Well, we were told a version of the story for sure. Like Teddy at the end says that he's transformed his story into Sammy Jenkins's story. So he tells it as if it's not his story, but it actually is. And he killed his wife with insulin.
Yeah,
that's what Teddy does. But
Teddy's story is unbelievable in itself.
Well, here's a chronology that could work. The people break in, they rape his wife, she survives, and then he loses his memory. Yeah. And then they become like Sammy Jenkins and his wife for a while, and she tests him because she's tortured by whether or not his condition is real, and he ends up killing her with the insulin.
That's a possibility.
Yeah, and I think that's what the movie wants us to think. Having seen it many times, I understand it's actually really hard the first time around, trust me, because it's a really dense movie.
Well, they wrap up that last bit so quickly that things are left hanging a bit.
Yeah, and the twist of the movie, of course, is beyond just that. It's that he's actually manipulated himself into killing Teddy. So the first scene of the movie is him killing Teddy, and the end of the movie is when you see how he tricked himself into thinking Teddy was the killer.
I mean, I understood that at the time he killed
Teddy. That's
right. Yeah, that was clear. Mm. But the whole of Teddy's motivation for doing what he's doing all the way through is implausible.
So I just take him at face value. What he said at the end, he wanted to help him. He was assigned to the wife's case, like he said. No reason why not, right? There was a rape.
He wanted to help him by giving him someone to kill every year or two.
Yeah. So he originally found the real guy, and then found that the memory of killing him didn't satisfy him.
That's right.
And so just kept throwing him other drug dealers and stuff to kill. Who knows how many?
That's the bit I find implausible.
Well, maybe, but it's also implausible that Lenny would manipulate himself into killing someone just because he got a little bit pissed off like that at the end too, right? It's a bit contrived. But let's face it, the entire movie, despite being quite gripping, it's a contrived movie. I mean, every single frame of that movie is deliberate and in there for a purpose. And a lot of it's just to distract you from where it's going.
Well, the whole drug scene is it's not central to the conclusion, other than the fact that he kills a guy who's obviously a drug dealer.
Yeah.
I've just realized that Teddy isn't just feeding him any old victim. He's feeding him drug dealers.
He's using him to take out bad people.
He's using him to be a Duterte.
Yeah. He sees it as a a win-win because Leonard gets to feel for a moment like he's avenged his wife. Yeah,
I just that penny just dropped.
Yeah, I think that's the idea, and it is a bit extreme. Like it takes murder quite lightly, you know, that people are messing around with that sort of thing. But, you know, that's sort of like a genre thing, right? Like crime.
But Teddy was always going to get done in the finish. That was inevitable.
Well, he was killed at the start.
Yeah. The start of the movie.
First scene, yeah.
The start of the movie, but that's the finish in chronological order that things happen. He was always going to get done in the finish when the guy couldn't remember what his role had been in the previous things. He was always going to get into trouble.
Yeah, of course.
He didn't think it through, really.
Yeah, but I think the twist that he manipulated himself was, I never saw that coming because you know everybody else is manipulating him. You know you can't trust anyone else. But it actually turns out he's the one manipulating himself. And probably when Teddy suggested you want to just kill some drug dealers or something and that'll make you feel better, he probably would have just gone, let's just do that. I've got nothing to live for. You know, like he might have been complicit in that whole plan.
Yes.
Possibly. I mean, you don't see that, but it's funny how much it makes you think, right? That movie, when we had pizza, we were saying, you know, it disrupts your brain waves to an extent. You said, what was it that you said?
Well, I just found that I couldn't remember something basic about it. And that's because the character Teddy looked like someone I know.
Yeah.
And then when I came to tell you that he looked like someone I know, I couldn't think who it was that he looked like.
Have you remembered yet?
No.
See, I think the movie's done something to your brain. It does. Yeah. It does do something to your brain.
I was thinking it through the whole first half hour of the movie, and now I can't remember who it is that he looked like, even when his face is fresh in my mind.
Yeah, that's right. I can show you his IMDb page. Maybe that'll help later. But
yeah.
I think when I first saw it, it took me a while to kind of recover from the stress.
Yeah.
And it's not stress of the violence or the story or anything. It's just the constant focus that you need.
Intense concentration.
It's not a chronological movie and everything's happening out of sequence, even though you know it's reverse, but you still have to focus really hard to remember now what was the start of the scene two scenes ago that it's going to end with in this one.
Yeah, and then, but it's still riveting.
Yeah.
It's more than simply forcing you to concentrate. It's actually riveting, waiting for the next piece of the puzzle to appear.
Yeah. Do you think the aspect, though, of it forcing you to concentrate makes it more riveting?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly adds to the tension, yeah.
And it makes you focus. It's like they say in sort of thrillers and horror movies and whatever, if you show an empty corridor for 1 second, a dark empty corridor for 1 second, the audience won't think anything. If you show it for 4 or 5 seconds, they're going to start seeing things in the dark that aren't there because they assume, because you've held that shot, that there's something to see.
Yes.
And I think when a movie does something like that to focus, when it just sort of breaks out of the mold and you know it's doing something different, you start paying attention to the smaller details.
And this one's virtually doing it throughout.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I always find one of the scariest things in any thriller type movie is when you're in a building at night and you're just hiding somewhere and you hear footsteps coming, and the longer it goes on that there's just footsteps getting closer and closer, and you start to imagine all sorts of things. Yeah.
Do you think Guy Pearce did a good job?
I think Guy Pearce was extremely good. Extremely credible.
Yeah.
He looked genuinely confused throughout the whole thing. The way he held that, I don't really know what's going on here, look about him, I found very convincing. I didn't think anyone else in the movie stood out for their performance particularly.
No, but for being charismatic in the moment, like being able to be a character that you see once and go, oh, I like that guy. He's funny. Like the guy at the motel. You said you
like
him.
Oh, I like the guy behind the jump at the motel. I thought he.
But you see him once and you see he's got kind of kind eyes and he's a big guy and you just want to give him a hug.
There was 20 minutes or so of that movie where I actually had a couple of laughs, it was just an isolated patch, actually.
It's quite funny, though. There's jokes in it.
Yeah, there's a few chuckles.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of stop laughing. You recognize the jokes and you don't laugh towards the end because I think you see that it's quite serious.
Becoming sick jokes, that's right.
Yeah. And I think after the Sammy Jenkins reveal, like when you think it's actually a guy that killed his wife with insulin because he had that condition, I think it takes a tragic turn at that point. Like you sort of start taking things a bit more seriously.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I find that story really tragic. And then when you find out later that it might be what applied to Leonard or probably did apply to Leonard, it's even doubly tragic as a reveal.
The biggest difficulty I was having at that stage was that this short-term memory loss is obviously a very rare condition. Yeah. And then you had two people in whose paths have crossed who've both got the same condition.
So what does that tell you?
That was very implausible.
Well, what does it tell you? It actually didn't happen then.
No. Well, we now know it didn't.
Yeah. Isn't that genius, though?
It didn't happen. And I guess instinctively you felt that.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's amazing, though. Like there's so much in Memento where Christopher Nolan or his brother, whoever's responsible for the script for the most of it, they seem to be able to push you to exactly the right place with such precision. So they make you doubt that two people with that rare condition could cross paths. It occurs to you, but they also distract you quickly enough that you don't turn against the movie. And then they reveal later on, by the way, that probably didn't really happen, so you didn't have to worry about that. Yeah,
maybe they did, but it was really troubling me at one stage. It was disrupting my general appreciation of the movie for a while because I was just thinking this is silly.
Which it would be. It would be. It'd be... Yeah. A very convenient plot point, wouldn't it, if you had that? So I can tell you there is a key to this answer if you want to know what it is. There's a bit, I don't know if you noticed it or not or if you thought about it at the time. You actually saw it twice. So it's in that section that we replayed. There's a bit where he's talking about Sammy Jenkins and he's in the mental asylum at the end. Yes. He's just killed his wife or whatever. And he keeps trying to make eye contact with people. And,
correct.
And Leonard's explaining, you fake it, so you just make eye contact with anyone and you pretend you recognize them just in case they expect you to. And then he looks up at one person and that person walks across the camera.
Yeah.
And when they get to the other side, Sammy Jenkins has turned into Leonard. It's Guy Pearce. It's not the other actor. For about 4 or 5 frames.
Well, I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's there. And it's amazing when you see it because I had a lot of doubts about the story when I first watched it.
What's the point of that, do you think?
It's showing you that they're the same person.
Right.
It's giving you a visual. It might even be a subliminal thing to give you the idea, but there's very few people who notice it when they're watching the movie.
No, I certainly didn't notice it. And as you say, we did replay that because that's where we were picking it up from.
I was actually a bit worried that we were playing that part again because I thought he'll see it and then that might make it weird or something. But it is really quick. It's very quick.
Mind you, we're watching it on a big screen from fairly close. You can't watch every inch of that screen at the same time. And I think what you're talking about is he must have been way up in the top right or something.
Right in the center. I'll show it to you again after we finish recording because I think you'll find it really interesting. And I know exactly the timestamp now because we watched it twice.
Okay.
So do you get anything else out of it? I mean, obviously, it's well shot, right, especially for a first-time filmmaker and all that sort of stuff.
Well, I didn't get anything deep and meaningful out of it. I just found it an intriguing concept, riveting to watch. You were wondering what the ultimate storyline was. You were wondering what the solution to the puzzle was.
Yeah.
But there's no deeper message or any...
I would disagree with that. I think there's some really interesting questions that get raised by the movie that they might
really
you might find yourself dreaming about them tonight. But it's more like things about what is the nature of reality? What's the relationship between memory and consciousness itself and experience? How reliable is memory? And you believe a reality that is flawed?
It raises all those questions.
It's they say them out loud.
That's like the meaning of life. It's not, they're not answerable.
Of course they are. That's all I think about. What else is there to think about?
Well,
if it's answerable, we've already got the answer for the most part, right?
Yeah. If we know that minds work in strange ways sometimes, we all know that from our personal experience.
Yeah.
But it's not a question I sit around and trouble myself with.
Well, maybe you will now.
That's what I mean. Well, I can – that movie doesn't answer any question.
No, it poses the question. Yes, it doesn't answer that. Yeah.
That's what I mean by that. It doesn't suggest – there's no message as to what the answer to the questions is. Not that I not that I could pick up.
But no, but I don't think –
so I understood the theme about the mind – playing tricks on you. Of course
they say it out loud. You can't miss it, but that's a deep question, I think. I mean, for me anyway, I find that quite intriguing.
Well, he's screaming it throughout the entire movie.
That's right. And
he's virtually narrating that aspect of it throughout the entire movie.
Yeah. And Leonard says it in that cafe too. He says, memory's imperfect. You know, even if I did have my memory, it wouldn't mean that anything was real, anything I remembered was true.
But of course, if you're in the state that his mind was in, of course, it would become increasingly perplexing.
Mm.
Of course.
Yeah, perhaps.
It would drive you nuts.
Mm. Well, yeah, I guess it did. Drove him to murder in a way. I mean.
He was conned into murder. Well, I mean, when I say conned, he was complicit, but he was being fed murder victims.
Yeah. Mm. But I think at the end, the real genius of Memento is not really the plot or the puzzle or any of the questions that it poses. It's the experience that it gives you by playing the movie in reverse.
It is.
Because at the start of every scene, you're in exactly the same situation as Leonard. And if you're going to tell a story about someone who's got short-term memory loss, that is a genius. I mean, whoever, you know, came up with that, they must have just...
Well, it's fascinating. It is. It's, as I said at the start, it's riveting.
Yeah.
It is riveting.
Because you have that experience, right?
Yeah.
And no other movie gives you that experience. No other movie's ever used that gimmick.
The technique is, well, I can't say it's unique, but I've certainly never seen it or heard it suggested before.
I'm pretty sure it is unique.
I've never read any book that goes about it that way that I can recall anyway.
Well, it's based on a short story, so I assume the short story was similar.
And it's would be incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah. Imagine the plotting. You'd just be sitting around for weeks and weeks and weeks trying to work out every detail of it.
The effort it took just to watch it
was
enough. Imagine the effort it would go into actually creating it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those movies that it's really sad that it's 19 years old now because it's not a very fresh example, but people always say things like there's nothing new under the sun. There's no new ideas. Everything's based on something else.
Yeah.
And I've always been able to say, nah, Memento.
Memento. Yeah. Well,
there are new ideas.
Yeah. There is an element of gimmickry to it.
That's what I called it at the start, right? Yeah, in the intro.
There is an element of gimmickry but you don't sit there thinking, this is a gimmick. You are riveted to know how the story unfolds.
No, that's right. Yeah. And you could watch it multiple times and it still works.
Yeah, okay.
I must say I did, like, knowing the end lets you know which parts of the story are a bit non-essential and it's a bit long-winded. It's a two-hour movie that really, it really only has the start scene and the end. Like, the bookends are the important bits. Everything that happens in the middle is kind of exploring what would it be like to have that condition and helping you understand and giving you the language of the movie. But it's not really essential to the plot. You just need to know the start and the end, really. And then,
did it win any awards or kudos, or how was it received by the industry?
I think it got great reviews. I'm not sure about awards. Let me check for you. I think it'll say somewhere on – it's the number 51 top-rated movie on IMDb. That's of all time.
Right.
Which is pretty good. Awards, I can't see it off the top of my head.
Well, Guy Pearce has never won an Oscar or anything like that I can recall. I suspect industry peers and the like would have been a bit suspicious about giving it. It was just a bit too offbeat.
Yeah, it's very different.
Too offbeat to be awarded because very hard to line up with anything that's a bit straighter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a risk. I mean, if I read that script, I wouldn't be confident that the audience would be able to follow the movie.
Right.
Before you see the result. I think if you read it like that and it's in reverse order and whatever, I wouldn't have that confidence. And I'm pretty, I think people are smart and I think people know how to watch movies. But as weird as it is, I think it it takes you right to that point of not being able to follow things. Like you're constantly a couple of steps behind.
Well, you're constantly feeling you're going to miss something.
Yeah.
You know, and having lost the thread, you'll be completely floundering. That's
right.
Yeah, you feel on the edge of that the whole way through. Look, Guy Pearce, I think, did that character wonderfully, but the character himself, because his mind's in the state it is, he's not actually someone that you can easily identify with or feel a lot of empathy for. And I think that's probably why his role in portraying that person would not have necessarily attracted awards.
Well, I've got the awards here. It was nominated for Best Writing.
Yep.
Best Screenplay, that is. Best Film Editing. So it was just writing and editing.
Right.
That's the Academy Awards.
Logical.
Yeah, yeah. And Best Screenplay for Golden Globes. Nominated only, didn't win. It did win AFI Awards, USA Screenwriter of the Year, Christopher Nolan.
Yep.
And it was nominated for Movie of the Year and Editing of the Year. Yeah, so
no recognition for the acting.
Nothing. Oh, Best Actor in a Leading Role, nominated at some other smaller award circuit, community awards. Possibly in retrospect, it should have won every writing award available. It really should have got a clean sweep, I believe.
Yeah.
Because I can just imagine how hard that would have been to write.
Very clever piece of writing.
Yeah. It's one thing to have a genius idea. It's another thing to execute it perfectly. And I think that's what Memento does.
Yeah.
So would you be interested to watch more Christopher Nolan movies now?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Okay. So that turned you around. From Interstellar, you wouldn't want to, but...
No. Interstellar didn't leave me in a situation where I wouldn't watch.
No.
It's not that.
Yeah.
It's just that I wasn't that intrigued by it. This one I found engrossing and so different.
Okay.
That I'd be particularly interested to see something that was a little bit less offbeat.
Yeah.
By him. Yeah, he certainly interests me as a writer, yeah.
Yeah, and he's now working on a new project that's all secretive, but he's writing it, so I'm really excited. I don't know when it's going to be, like 2022 or something that he releases it.
Well, I'm happy to wait and see.
Yeah, well,
I'm not going to sit around with my tongue hanging out. Oh, well, when it happens, it happens.
You've got his back catalogue to go through. I've seen everything he's done already, so I'm wringing my hands waiting for the next thing. God, he takes his sweet time, I tell you.
Yeah.
It's hard being a Christopher Nolan fan.
Looking at that movie, it's easy to see why.
Yeah, so place in cinematic history you think deserved for Memento?
Well, I'm nearly using the word unique, but I'm not in a position to really know that, but it's certainly unusual. And as a person who doesn't watch a lot of movies, it drew me right in and engaged me in a way that it's hard to imagine any movie doing any better.
It didn't
tweak all my emotions or anything like that. I like a movie that makes me teary, and I like a movie that really gets me going emotionally. It didn't do any of that, but intellectually it absolutely completely engrossed me.
I think the emotional side of things, you don't have time to take it in while you're trying to keep up with the plot.
Yeah.
But once you know the plot and you can start thinking about the background stories, the Sammy Jenkins story and the stuff that raises, it does become emotional. That moment when Sammy Jenkins's wife asks for the third shot and she's almost teary, I started getting a little bit choked up, I must admit, because I can just imagine being in that situation.
Yes, but now you know it didn't happen.
But it did happen to his
wife.
Well,
it happened.
You've just got to change the actresses around.
Between Guy Pearce and his wife. Yeah, so I guess if you know that watching it the second time, yes, I can see what you mean.
Yeah, it is. It's a different movie. So maybe I'll give you a copy of it and you can watch it at your leisure.
You've done well to get me watching in the first place. I wouldn't push your luck trying to get
that's right. Exactly.
Come back and watch things for a second time.
You wait till you see what I've got in store for you next.
Unless it's The Graduate, and then I'm happy to watch it again.
I think there should be a point where you get me to watch The Graduate and we can reverse roles, and I'll talk about my reaction to it. Well, I'll give you that. But all right.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching with me, Dad.
We're going to rate that one?
Oh, yeah. Give us a score. That's right. What's the score?
I'd give that an 8.
an 8. Mm-hmm. Even IMDb gives it higher than that. Our IMDb is 8.6.
Out of 10 we're talking, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't give many things more than 8.
No, I would imagine you wouldn't give a 10 because it's impossible for something to be perfect, right?
I might, but once you've given a 10, you're saying nothing can ever be better. I'm always looking for the one that's better.
You're true. And what you said about Memento applies to Christopher Nolan as a criticism in general, which is he doesn't engage emotion as much as he does intellect.
No.
And that's a flaw of his, I think.
Okay, so that's it's certainly Interstellar, and that one, there was very little emotion for me.
Yeah, I always get the feeling he knows how to do it. He's just not that interested in it.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, well, you know, we'll give you a bit of that so you can relate to the characters. But I don't really care.
If that's the case, it would be a flaw because that's a misunderstanding of human nature.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think he understands that's what we need, but I think there's something wrong with his brain that he doesn't need it in the same way that we do. Yeah. He's kind of like an alien looking, you know, like looking down on some insects or something and just going, oh, well, they seem to like honey. We'll give them a bit of honey.
Yeah, it's a bit like playing music without passion, though. You're missing a pretty important ingredient.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But he does the other stuff so well, and he's the only filmmaker who does, and he's the only blockbuster filmmaker who's allowed to.
Right.
He really is the only one. There's no one else allowed to make an intellectual movie like that. He just had enough success early on, and he's whatever he negotiated, he's now got freedom to just be the intellectual movie guy.
Okay.
And it's something we need anyway, right? Like we can't every movie can't be Jurassic Park or the Avengers. It's eventually you've got to have something that's a bit more challenging. So I'm all for it, even if he doesn't know how to make us cry.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, no crying, but an 8.